As the Queen, I declare this show open.
Hello and welcome to Hacker Voice Radio. This is Max.
Hello.
This is Bilal.
And it is the 28th of August 2006.
It is, and we have a special guest here for tonight. It's Keith from KC Software.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining us, Keith.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for the invitation.
Not a problem at all, and just to give kind of people an intro about who you are and why you're on the show. We mentioned a couple of shows ago that we were working on a project-orientated calendar. We were looking into a cheap, free solution for this. So we had a look at Planza, had a look at Google Calendar, and then Naxter mentioned this Dot Project, PHP web-based project planning management software
and
program. Yes, and Keith had a look at our show and emailed us in to let us know that you're one of the developers on Dot Project, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I've been on the team now for about 2 years.
Excellent. So you came across our show, and I think we mentioned Dot Project for only about two minutes, very short.
I think it's more like 2 seconds.
Yeah, very short. I think what's the status of Dot Project now there, Naxter?
What, our installation of it, or
our installation of it.
Basically, we've started putting in some of the tasks and events for the production, and basically just getting ready to start putting on in all of the complicated stuff once we've actually worked out how we're doing it. I believe it's up and running now. I did manage to break it somehow.
Yeah, you did.
Well, I didn't so much manage to break Dot Project, I managed to break Apache. For some reason, I just changed the port that it was listening on, and then all of a sudden, it didn't understand PHP anymore.
Yeah, I heard you guys' show on Friday about that. It sounded like it wasn't knowing how to handle or load the PHP libraries anymore.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I completely don't understand why though, because we didn't change any other settings other
it's
than
very
the port.
Weird.
But you know, did anyone actually fix that? Because I didn't.
Oh, I thought you fixed it.
Oh,
let me check if it's still broken.
Well, it's all my fault, whatever it is. Although I did manage to fix a slight bug in the task.
Yeah, it's still broken.
Great, I'll probably fix that later. Yeah, I managed to fix a slight bug. Well, I didn't fix it, I just found out how other people fixed it in the tasks page, because we're using MySQL 5, so in the from query, you needed to have brackets around it, and for some reason the query didn't have brackets around it in the code, so it just added the brackets and it all started working again, which was quite satisfying.
Yeah, I heard you guys talking about that. You're using Dot Project 204, correct?
Yes, I think so.
the latest release?
Yes.
I double-checked, actually, as I was listening to your show that night, I went ahead and double-checked the core development, and that one's been fixed already, so that has been resolved from here on
out.
Excellent.
Cool.
I didn't do that, though. That was somebody else's intelligence there.
Well, considering the amount of debug information that it gives you when something goes wrong, it's a bit bewildering to start with, you know?
Yeah, there's actually, in your php.ini, it's a good step to go ahead and turn on as much debugging as possible just to get things rolling. Once things are up and fully functional and things like that, then you can go ahead and turn it off. But unfortunately, most people in shared hosting environments, which is most of the people that use this .project, don't have access to edit that sort of thing. So
certainly,
it's a give and take.
So it'd be much more difficult.
Yeah.
But right now we're running it on a privately hosted server, so we can play around with it as much as we like, and we can pretty much do whatever we need with the database and with PHP.
And if we lock ourselves out of it, we can always just, you know,
reboot it manually. I can always go up to the server and kick it.
It's always a plus.
When all else fails, kick it.
That's right, yeah.
Works 98% of the time.
Yeah. So how did you go about joining .project and the development team?
That's actually sort of an interesting story. Probably three and a half years ago now, I was actually working for the Department of Justice here in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And we were managing a team of probably 50, 60 people, and we were looking for some sort of project management suite that would let us do what we were looking for. Everybody was used to Microsoft Project, which Microsoft Project is really great as long as you have one person in total control of the project. You know, they get to lay out the start dates, the end dates, and nobody gets any feedback, or they don't track things to a real fine level. So we started looking around to see other things that were out there, because when you have 50 to 60 people, there's a lot of moving parts. You have to keep things rolling. We looked at a few other things. We looked at a thing, I believe it's called Primavera Enterprise, and at the time, I think we spec'd it out as like $2,000 a seat, and that's just not...
Well,
yeah, it's just not feasible. At that point, I found .project. So I started using it personally, deployed it at the Department of Justice. We had a handful of people using it there. And then I promptly left the Department of Justice. But went ahead and kept my involvement up with the .project community, and it's just grown from there. So probably a year or so after I started getting involved in the forums and started making recommendations and putting out some bug fixes, I got invited to be part of the community.
That's awesome. So it's just like a lot of the other kind of open source projects that start out is one Linux box amongst all the other Windows boxes in the server farm of an organization, and a cause to scratch an itch, as it were, without having to dish out an extraordinary amount of money for a Microsoft product or any other closed source products such as SharePoint and the Project Live, MS Project Live, which I believe costs I don't know the exact sum, but I know it's much more than a 20 man group can really afford. It does seem like .project is very much like all the other kind of open source web development projects out there, like asset management systems I've seen around, and it's good that these things are being kept up to date and are being developed. Otherwise, people just won't be able to do things, or will have to dish out a lot of money for.
Well, and that's actually part of the way I tracked you guys down is that I keep an eye out there for new .project deployments, for people talking about .project.
Yeah.
And I make a point of getting in contact with them and figuring out, you know, what things we're doing right, what things we're doing wrong, how we can make things better. So I figure, you know, like I told you guys, if we're going to take over the world, we need to do this right.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And what was I going to say? I got distracted by IRC. It's really good that there is development work going on with these kind of projects, and that they're kept up to date. But I think the problem that some people face, and I don't know if you've seen this, Keith, but to actually track these projects, to actually track these solutions down, it's quite difficult, because maybe .project doesn't have enough advertising or something like that, but it will be difficult for somebody who's actually searching for something like that, unless they have good Googling skills, they might not be able to stumble upon it as easy as they would for something that's paid.
Right, there are a lot of commercial project management applications out there. I mean, Primavera, Microsoft Project, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of them. So that's really one of the areas that I've been making a point of trying to get involved in and trying to, you know, let people know that there are other alternative solutions out there.
Yeah.
And it's not entirely altruistic, though. I do run a company providing some of those solutions and providing hosting. So there are other motivations involved there.
Yeah, certainly. So obviously, because the software is free, doesn't necessarily mean that you guys don't make any money out of it.
Right.
Yeah. There's always a need for someone who knows what they're doing.
Exactly, yeah.
Even if the software is free.
Right, and we've actually found a lot of support among groups, generally small development shops, say 5 to 20 people, who know they need something, but there's nothing out there that fits all their needs. And so the sort of sales pitch I use with them is, okay, you can use one of the commercial solutions. You can use Microsoft Project, and it might fit 80% of your needs. Well, that's great, but you're never going to move past that 80%. If you start with Dot Project, it might only meet 60% of your needs, but then you can customize it. You can add things on, you know, to whatever your heart's content.
Mm. That's certainly something that would come into a small business's mind as they were trying to grow or something like that. If they're going to be stuck with a proprietary solution that they can't expand at all to their needs, or they just can't use to do all of their tasks at hand, then they're going to be much less likely to actually make full use of it and ever have any kind of coherent plan of what the hell's going on so far as project management software, or any software for that matter.
Oh yeah, everything's almost guaranteed to be out of date because nobody wants to use it.
Of course.
I think something like Doc Project gives people the ability to have expandability, to basically take something that's been written already for a set purpose, and then maybe in-house coders can develop things into that, and I've seen this a lot with other software like asset management software and maybe data tracking software or projects that enable a group of people to work on one thing or one person to track a lot of things. The thing that you download off the internet may only give you so much, but it gives you also the ability to expand on it and build in different connectors to different things, and you can snap in various other either hardware or other software related products into this one solution, which is really cool for open source software, and that's something that closed source proprietary software does not allow you to do. And I'm thinking, you know, if you had like MS Project running, you couldn't easily map it into something else. But with Dot Project,
actually,
you could.
Actually, some of the most active development going on in the community right now is integrating Dot Project with various bug tracking systems. Our group itself, we've released a Mantis integration, the Mantis bug tracking system, and there, I believe there's another group out of North Carolina that's done similar stuff. The Dot Project group itself, we've released an integration for Ventum, that's the bug tracking system put out by the MySQL group. There are a handful of other ones. There's actually a PHP Nuke integration. I know of a couple people working on Mambo integrations. So it's really nice because once you have these little flexible components, you've got a CMS, you've got a project management system, you've got, you know, whatever individual pieces, then you can start tying the data together on the back end. And it's just not something available with other solutions.
That's right, yeah.
Although some other proprietary solutions have got plug-in APIs and all that,
sure,
potential integration, all of it is completely metered by whoever wrote the software in the first place. So if they don't want you to write a plug-in with, say, to integrate with a PHP application, you're not, it's just going to be hell for you. It may be possible, but it's going to cost loads of money in development costs. And even if some enthusiast decides to do it themselves, which is probably quite unlikely, it's not likely to be a viable option for any kind of business with some sense.
Yeah, no.
Well, I actually met some of the development group behind PayPal's PHP API last year. And it was really kind of interesting talking with them, because when they released it, which I want to say was mid-October, maybe late October last year, the PHP API became PayPal's number one download that day, just because there were so many people interested, so many people just clamoring for that sort of sort of plugin, that sort of module.
Yeah, a lot of these kind of companies that do allow plugins or facilitate the ability for plugins will actually develop them for you at a price, and not allow you to create them yourself. But I guess that's really business in itself, and that is how X company works, and company Y works a different way and allows you to do everything, because there are projects, or they are not in, their profit margin or their profit making engine isn't their product. It's something else. It could be their support, or as Keith said, support and hosting and various other things.
Well, that's a really careful line we've had to walk. I mean, obviously, we do provide hosting and support and things like that. But a lot of the sort of .Project 3.0, which is the vision that we're going towards right now, a good amount of that has been funded by customers of KC Software, other people in the community, things along those lines. So we're having to walk the very careful line of saying, okay, this is something we should pass back to the community, because the community is going to be much better off, and then it's going to build our recognition within the community. It's going to build the community's recognition. But then there's other things that we have to say, no, wait, this is something that is, you know, very important at its core to what I'm doing, what KC Software is doing, and makes a lot more sense to keep internal. And it's a hit or miss. Sometimes we get it right, sometimes we get it wrong.
Yeah.
Slightly digressing a bit, whilst I was looking around for a solution of some sort for our project management needs for this release, it made sense to look for project management software that, say, a film production company would use, since that's exactly what we're trying to do. And I came across a piece of open source software called Celtx, or Celtx, or I'm not sure how you pronounce it, as there's a problem with a lot of these names these days. It's actually based on Firefox, and I've had a look at some of the features, and they seem fairly good. But as you were saying earlier about how you can just develop new bits and pieces for it as you need to, it seems like they've already done it. It's like they've got a boxed project management piece of software and added a whole load of things very specific to films, like scripts, characters, actors, locations, storyboards, and they've just already put it there for you. But the way in which they've done it is a bit confusing, because that you have to use their staging server, and the one thing that annoyed me about this was the fact, what if I don't want to use their staging server? And what if, as they suggest they will do in the future, they're going to charge for the use of a staging server? Then would that mean I'd have to write my own server and sort of kind of reverse engineer it from the outside, as it were?
Right, and then even if they do give you your data, what good is it?
Well, exactly.
Because you don't have the application to run it on. And that's actually part of our sort of pitch for hosting your .project is, you know, if you're unhappy with our service, you can take a database dump at any time and move on. And so it's pretty good customer service motivation there.
Certainly. Well, that's the advantage of using not only open source client software and interfaces for this sort of thing, but also for having a completely open back end as well. Because that's the one thing I think these people have failed in. Even though the interface is absolutely excellent, and if you're doing films, it's perfect. But like I said, if you are at all unhappy with it, you can rewrite the client if you like, and you can add extra bits and pieces into it. But
oh, that's all?
Well, I'm sure you could completely start all over again. I mean, the fact that it's based on Firefox was slightly bizarre to me, because it doesn't look anything like Firefox. It doesn't even look like any kind of browser I've ever seen in my life. It just looks like a normal application. I'm not entirely sure why they start with Mozilla. They could have just started from scratch. But I suppose having a code base to go from is better than
it's
not.
It's easier.
Yeah, certainly. Although a slightly bizarre choice of sort code base. But yes, that was before I came across some of the other solutions, such as .project, which hopefully should be perfectly fine for our needs.
Yeah.
Providing we can work out how to use it.
Well, it sounds I'm like sure you have Apache problems to deal with first. So.
Yeah, that's right. Before we can even start playing around with the software, we need to sort this Apache thing out.
Yes, that's true. I'll have to try and work out what I've broken.
That was so all you did was just change the port that it was meant to be listening on.
Yeah. Well, the distribution that comes with Ubuntu? Yes, Ubuntu.
That's right, yeah.
It comes with a built pre-configured script which worked absolutely perfectly when we got it out of the box. And it even had a separate included file, configuration file, that only had the listen port in it, and that was it. And all I did was open the port.conf file, changed the port, and it all fell down around its ears. You know, the weird thing is it doesn't seem to be giving out any useful logs, like, I don't know, can't find the library or anything like that. It's just it's just deciding it doesn't know about it at all. So,
well, it just sends you it as a file instead of rendering it to...
Well, what I did notice is it is sending you the right type. It just isn't actually registering the fact that it's supposed to do something with it.
That's right.
So it's not just outputting it as like text, or which is what I've seen happen more often when something goes awry with your configuration, which that would be understandable, but it's sending the right type. I'm very confused.
Yeah, just I couldn't diagnose that one without looking at it a little more specifically, but it looks like it's just not being told to load those libraries. If it's both giving you the right file type and not trying to display it as text, that's one thing. But then not generating any errors saying library is not found, then it sounds like it's just not being told to load the libraries.
I mean, if I wasn't looking at the file that says load the libraries and the definition type for it, I would say the same thing. It's bewildering, to say the least. Damn.
Yeah.
I can remember the password.
So the technical answer is it's screwed up.
Yeah. That would be the technical answer.
That's weird why it would go so wrong on just changing the port. Surely, if anything, it would just not respond on a certain port, or it wouldn't load properly, or it wouldn't listen, or the firewall on the server would have blocked it. It just doesn't make sense how changing the port would completely mess up the way it processes PHP.
Yeah, I'm just actually looking at it now, and I can't see any... I can't see anything different at all, ever. I opened a few files, but I didn't actually commit any changes to them. I was just looking for where it was trying to load the port definition.
Yeah.
I don't know. Here we go. Ports. Ports.conf. How handy. And all it says in it is listen the port number that we assigned it to, which is all it said before. And then it's included in... one of the other config files is in it's confd. Anyway, ignore
that's,
me.
That's
I'm just doing this.
While we do live troubleshooting.
Live debugging and yes.
First degree debugging.
Yeah. Hmm.
So I've been, I went down to Maplin's, which is a bit like Radio Shack.
Only a bit and more they English.
Only a bit better. Yeah. They have like loads of stuff, and we had this project meeting on Sunday yesterday, and we were talking about like getting into PIX programming and stuff like that. So I thought I'll go out and buy myself a PIX programmer kit, and it's you can buy one which is already assembled, or you can buy one which is just like a PCB and loads of components. So I thought I'll do that, and I've got myself the whole kit and everything, and it's kind of like 68% complete. I just need to put all the resistors on it, because I fucked the resistors up. I was reading the color bars wrong on a couple, and I thought, oh dear, I'm going to have to desolder them and put them back the right way.
Oops.
Yeah, and I think I got a few of the LEDs wrong in, but I think I can't really do anything about that. It's just like not going to work. On the LEDs, I'm not going to think about that. I think I got it right. I just wasn't sure, you know, when you're not 100% sure.
As long as it's not going to make you think that it's broken when it actually isn't, like, you know, the power LED, because that would be bad.
No, the power LED is fine. It's just one of the output LEDs from, like, if let's say you program in something to the PIX, you can run the PIX program for like debugging, and you can test it on board, because
okay.
It's like it's not only just a programmer board, it's also an experimental board, and it's got like a 4 megahertz chip on the board, a little quartz crystal chip.
Oh, right.
And it can do 8-pin, 16-pin, 4-pin, no, 8-pin, 16, and 32, I think. Or 23, sorry. So you can do a variety of chips on the board, and then it's got like a little serial connector that you can plug straight into a computer.
That sounds like a handy piece of kit to have.
It is, yeah, and it was quite fun, because I haven't done any soldering for a while, so it was good to get back onto that.
Nice refresher.
What's that?
It's a nice refresher, just, you know, doing a huge PCB project to get you started again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wasn't too bad before, and it's just, you know, the skills can kind of wear away. That's why I chose the simplest component to start on. You know, I didn't like start, well, I'm just going to solder this whole 23-pin connector in. I started on, like, one LED and worked my way up, and it's, you know, it's fine. I managed to do like 68% of it in an hour, which isn't too bad.
That's not too bad.
What's this board going to control?
Well, it's meant to control, or it's meant to program a microchip. So you stick a little PIX microchip on a little connector. You hook it up to your laptop or a computer, and you send an image over to it, and it will burn the image into the chip.
Right.
Which you can then use to control anything you want, like pretty much anything.
The weather.
Not the weather. I mean, like, logically speaking, you can control. You can make your own computer with it if you wanted to. Most of the older computers were made from just programming PIX controllers.
Well, they probably weren't PIX. They were. They'd be more like. It'd be EEPROM, wouldn't it? But PIC came in sort of the late 80s, and in the way we have it today, anyway.
Mm. So
yeah, I think the Homebrew Computer Club and those sorts of guys did that sort of stuff. Steve Wozniak and all those.
That's right. Yeah. So what you can do with this is you've got about, I don't know, about 100 goes on a chip. You can reburn it 100 times, I think, before it just kind of doesn't work anymore. It's pretty cool.
They have some crazy long reload lives.
What's that?
Most of the consumer available chips that you can get for a chip program have got some stupidly long lives. Something like 3,000 million reloads. which is more than anyone could possibly want. But maybe,
I guess
maybe not that
you
much.
Can go wrong a lot of times with that.
Just yeah. Don't treat it like RAM and you'll be in good shape.
Yeah.
Well, you probably could. You could probably. You can get certified submersible picks, which, although you're not actually supposed to submerge them,
submerge them in what? Water.
Yeah.
Okay. Why would you want to do that anyway? Seeing as you're going to have current flowing through it.
Well, it's like it's a safety thing. So if you were using in a piece of scuba equipment, for example.
Right.
As a, I don't know, for some reason, and for whatever reason, the enclosure broke, and it flooded. Then instead of just shorting out straight away, it will still be able to work for a certain amount of time before it just starts having too many errors and it will shut itself down.
Excellent. That's really cool.
Hmm.
Well, the chip I've got is a 16-bit PIC chip, which will, I don't know, it will pretty much control whatever you want it to a certain extent. I think you can program in, I think it's like 32K worth of assembly words or something like that. I'm not sure. I'll have to check that out before I start doing anything properly with it. But it comes with its own control software, where it will you can compile your own code with it and then send it off to the little programmer.
Oh. Sorry, I just jumped half of the config file by mistake. distracted me a tad. Sorry, what was that? Sorry, I'm a bit
I don't know. I think
we found the problem with Apache.
You deleted half of the code. I think like doing the kind of homebrew stuff is really cool. More people should do it. I haven't done it in a while. Sorry, go on.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Just learning stuff. So, like I said, I'm a bit out of it this evening.
Yeah, it's more than just, I don't know how to compare it. It's kind of similar to model making. Like, it's the same sort of hobby, but with making your own PIX programmer, not only have you, you know, followed certain amount of instructions and you've soldered your own kit and you know, bang, it's there, it works. You can actually do something with it, and you can take it further than is meant to be by the instructions. You know, you can do a certain amount of hacking to it, and then you can program whatever you want onto the control chip and make a robot from that. You know, you can make your own little four-wheeled infrared sensing robot, which is cool, which is something, you know, that nobody intended for that chip to do. It was just meant to be a chip that could be used to do whatever you want with it, which is far better than just making a model plane, which can do one thing and that's look pretty.
And also you could go even further than that. Instead of just making a robot or something, which people have done before, you can make something completely different that no one's ever thought of, and there's absolutely nothing
like
limiting
what?
To. Well, I can't think of anything.
Can't think of it right now
off the top of my head.
Well, I remember on Slashdot a few years ago, somebody took a small refrigerator and actually made a drink mixing machine out of that.
Oh, right.
And had it all hooked up to their, I think it was hooked up to webtender.com or something like that, where they could go ahead and say, make me this, and it would mix all the various types of alcohol together and make the drink for them.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Now that is an advancement in society.
Certainly, yeah. If you can get like a computer controlled mixing machine, that's just Ace, and then it will get you drunk very easily.
And you won't need to worry about mixing dodgy drinks that will hit you really badly in the morning, because in fact, instead of making a gin and tonic, you were making a gin and...
And tonic.
Well, a gin, and, actually.
And gin and gin.
Exactly.
Takes out the human error.
Yes. Providing
what if somebody
machine
like
can't
provided
get
it with some malicious code and like and made a virus, and it was just like it was mixing urine when and petrol.
It brings a whole new meaning to spiking your drink.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Yeah, that also reminds me of something by the sound of it a bit simpler. Someone made a drink dispensing, beer dispensing system that uses RFID, and it tracks how much beer you've had, which pretty cool. Not quite on the same level, but I think it was on Engadget. I seem to remember a video podcast or something involving it as well, and it was all linked up with PHP and stuff, so people could log on the website and see how drunk they were.
Cool. What if they were so drunk they couldn't log on? That's a fault in the software, isn't it?
No, I think that's a limitation in humans, actually.
Yes, of your own ability to stand up.
I would like to fire the bugs, please. Yes, I can't see the webpage. Duplicate bug. Quick, flame him.
I mean, I'm just kind of thinking what we could... Because I think what they were trying to do in the project meeting is kind of think up ideas of what they could do with the pick. Apart from like everything that they thought of, they was going to include in the pick, and it was like every single thing was, well, you know, we could do you could use a pick controller with that. Okay, so I think it was.
You make sure you could do that with the pick.
Yeah, it was mainly, well, you know who it was who was saying everything with the pick. So you could use a, I think one of the suggestions was a tail. You can make a programmable tail which reacts on, I think it's like a random sequence of servo motors that turn.
The budding... furries in the meeting or what?
That's right, yes, yeah.
Hang on, did I just say buddying? I didn't mean that.
No.
What you don't know is I am now called Silent Wolf. Only at the weekends, though.
Okay.
Are you kidding? I've actually scared you now.
Are there any furries there in the US scene?
I'm sorry?
Are there any furries there? In the US?
I'm just stunned by the creativity of you guys.
Creativity of?
Actually, I was just thinking, just recently I saw a website, there's a group here in Maryland that builds little remote control tanks.
Right.
Various World War II model tanks, and they run around and shoot each other with paintballs.
Awesome.
And,
yeah, and I believe that's all custom code. They're basically building, you know, full-scale little computers in their boxes and driving them around shooting each other.
Wow, that's
it's
cool.
Called battle tanks or something. It's pretty impressive.
There isn't a part of that I didn't like.
Computers, totally. Tanks, paintballs.
I've seen the same thing with boats, too.
Sweet. Now, if we can just invent some kind of space drive, so we could have a small, a miniature intergalactic war somewhere.
Yes. Again, you're completely going away from logic.
Yeah, you're shooting off pretty high there.
No, that would be way cooler than boats. Yeah.
I think boats like, if you could get a microcontrol boat, that would be cool. You could, like, get a submarine or something, like a torpedo. You could probably, why not just make a torpedo and shoot boats down and stuff?
Because that might be expensive.
Well, no, I mean like a mini one, not a real bloody Tokyo.
Well, sorry, you didn't really imply that very well.
No, sorry. I think another thing that would be cool to do is you could make your own computer with a few chips like that and like a breadboard, maybe.
You thinking of writing some kind of BASIC with?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Why not? I don't know where I would start, but yes, you could make your own computer. You could have a certain amount of memory and a little processor and instruction set, and off you go.
Well, that's certainly something people haven't been doing for quite some time now.
That's right, yeah. It's probably a good reason behind that. It just takes so bloody long to finish.
Well, you know, Steve Jobs. I'm sure there's a point there somewhere. He's flying out the window. My feet hurt. Sorry, go. Talk, please.
So, any news for tonight's show? I think there was a little bit yesterday, wasn't there? I can't remember where. I saw something really cool.
By the way, what on earth was it that was going on in Covent Garden at the weekend?
In Covent Garden, there apparently was a fire in the train or it was either on the platform or the train.
How strange! I haven't found any record of that anywhere.
No.
Very, very.
It might be one of those terrorist incidents that they covered up with a fire or something like that. You never know.
Well, yeah, maybe they were just evacuating everyone for some reason. They decided to say it was a fire. That would make sense, I suppose. Yeah.
Have things changed there much for you guys since the latest terrorist plot or whatever you want to call it?
Well, other than suddenly not being allowed to have any hand luggage, no.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, you're really not allowed to carry anything on board anymore on a plane. You have to, the only thing you're allowed is important documents like a passport and like maybe essential cosmetics and like food
for a child,
which has to be in a see-through tested container. Like, you know, somebody has to eat the stuff first. You have to, so it's not like explosive or something.
But to be honest, drinking a suspicious liquid isn't a terribly good test to see whether it's explosive or not.
No.
It's probably the worst test I've ever heard of. That's almost as good as when they confiscate all of the liquids. I'm sure I've ranted about this before. When they confiscated all the liquids on the day that it happened, they just started pouring them all into a big bucket. If that's not the worst thing to do with a whole load of volatile, potentially explosive chemicals, I don't know what is.
You're kidding me, right?
No. I could find you pictures if you wanted.
Wow, that just sounds scary. Well, here in the U.S., when they collect, nail files and stuff like that, they box it up, and you can actually buy it from them at the airport later on. You can just buy a box of stuff. And I've heard rumors that they put it on eBay.
That's cool. So you can just buy like a box of anyone's stuff that you don't know what's in there.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's just like getting a Christmas present and you don't know what's in there.
It's like on Oxford Street where they sell those mystery boxes, which are sort of about 50 centimeters by 50 centimeters by 20 centimeters or something. It's just a cardboard box and they sell it for £20 and they put a brick in it.
That's just mean.
It is, but to be honest, they are idiots who'd buy those things. I mean, who in their right mind would buy a box which they don't know what's in it from a complete stranger who is setting up an auction in a disused shopfront?
Well, you never know, you might get lucky.
It seems like, though, if you tried to bring that on the plane, that's one of those things you'd get flagged for and, you know, sent to Guantanamo Bay or something.
Oh, yeah.
A box full of bricks.
I'm sorry, sir, I bought this box from a random person. I don't know what's in it.
I haven't opened it yet. Oh, dear. That would be a really great way of, you know, terrorizing people. Not to give anyone ideas. Why do we keep doing that, by the way? We keep giving terrorists ideas. It's not a very good way to go.
I don't know. It's not really, is it?
No.
I mean, they could... Thank God the terrorists don't know about the internet, because if they did, oh, God. you don't know what would happen. They could just, like, Google for, like, bomb-making instructions, couldn't they?
Yeah, and they're just, like... You know, all of those evil internet people would tell them how to.
And if terrorists found out about IRC,
whoa, they could like talk to each other.
They could talk to each other. Yes.
That would be terrible. It's a good thing these terrorists aren't human.
See, I think one of the main problems about this whole kind of terrorist things is that they say that they don't want terrorists to win and just by making all this crazy hassle of fear and having to do certain things and changing your lifestyle, I'm not complaining about the fact that they have to, you know, monitor people at airports and that security has to be increased. That's okay. That should be in place, and that should have been in place way before. They actually didn't buy equipment that can actually sense dangerous liquids because it was too expensive. And the US had it, but they just couldn't be bothered to buy it. So, you know, that's something that they should have had in place. But it's other things like, you know, that they're trying to do in the UK. They, you kind of change your lifestyle and you change the way you think and you change the this and that. I think that's like really giving the terrorists a winning hand, because all the terrorist wants to do is terrorize, and it doesn't matter if the bomb goes off or if it doesn't, it's still causing an effect.
Hmm. Well, if you
I lived here in Washington D.C. about 4 years ago when the D.C. sniper was running around shooting people.
Yeah.
And just the total change that happened while that was going on. I mean, people wouldn't stop to get gas because a lot of the people that were shot were getting gas at that time.
Wow.
People were staying away from grocery stores and things like that. There was a Home Depot, which is a like a construction lumber supply chain here in the U.S. There was one near the apartment that I was living in, and that was one of the locations of one of the murderers. And it was amazing. Everybody's attitude changed, and everybody was nervous and tense, and it was just this little thing. I mean, not a little thing at all, but I mean, it was just this huge change that came from a relatively rare occurrence. I mean, there were something like 10 or 13 people attacked, and it just completely changed everything. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. It doesn't matter if something actually happens, just the thought, the terror that's invoked by
that it could happen.
Possibility. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's also ended up being quite good leverage for certain unscrupulous members of the government to put through legislation that most people wouldn't normally agree with, which is the other aspect of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think you know, if those certain members had their way, they would make walking down the street illegal, you know,
or at least heavily fined.
Yeah, and I think it's going to happen soon here in the UK that we'll have mandatory identification and all that kind of stuff, and it's proved to not be actually an effective form of deterrent for terrorism for many countries, one being the US, two being Spain.
And the Motor Vehicles Office, where some of the 9/11 hijackers actually got their identification, was across.
Uh-oh. Hello? Hello? Balls. Hello.
Hello.
That's better. Skype. I'll edit that out. Otherwise, we'll run overrun.
Hi.
Hello.
I think that was Skype.
No problem.
Yeah, it's probably my.
So, you were saying the motor vehicle.
Oh yes. The Department of Motor Vehicles office across the street from the apartment I was living in was actually the place where some of the 9/11 hijackers got their identification. So I was just agreeing with you that having valid identification doesn't mean anything at all. I mean, it means that you might know somebody at the office and can get a copy.
That's right. And I think another thing that was kind of overlooked, which is quite frightening that it was, is the fact that that the tube bombing, the people that carried out the tube bombings and the one that was on the bus as well in London, all were British citizens. And if the identity card system was in place a month or 3 months before this happened, they would have an identity card. And it doesn't matter if, you know, it wouldn't have mattered. They would still have done it. The only difference is that you'd be able to pick the little bit of burnt plastic off their body and find out who they are instantly.
Which is completely useless after the fact they've just blown themselves up.
Exactly.
Because for the most part, their families have no idea that they were doing this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And if they had any links to anyone else who was possibly encouraging, chances are they will be very far removed from them anyway.
Hmm.
So it's completely pointless, so far as terrorism is concerned.
Yeah, it's a scary thing that they're putting these kind of laws.
We're going to have to actually end off the show about here, otherwise we're going to overrun.
Okay.
I'll edit out the problems that we had earlier.
Okay.
Just to make sure it doesn't overrun. Thanks very much, Keith, for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you for having me, guys.
That's no problem.
No problem. It was good fun.
And whenever you guys get questions or comments about Dot Project, feel free to drop me a note, or you can visit the website, dotproject.net, and poke around, see if there's anything you learn or anything you have comments on. That's about it.
Excellent.
I'm sure we'll be speaking to you fairly soon.
Yeah.
Take care. Then. This was Hacker Voice Radio on the 28th of August 2006. This was Naxter.
And catch us again for tomorrow for our last show of the season of Season 5.
Special edition.
And I'm Bilal. Special edition, yes.
Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Yo, 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 check it. Check it, check it, check it, check it, check it, check it. Yo, yo, here I come. Yo, check it. Intellectually, conceptually, I'm without competition. Theoretically, I'm trying to be without repetition. Too many MCs abuse the mic for spite. They bite other styles of MCs just as vile. While I'm trying to flow opposite, like the Nile. Like Gucci, I'm trying to define my style. Sophisticated, adversaries bound to hate it. Like the 12th of mine, it's long awaited. Inspirational, confrontational, I come correct. Reject syntactic sugar, I come direct to sucking MCs. With all due respect, if you step, leave with all new regret. And consequently, the consequence is expensive. The lyric convinces the most skeptical skeptic that the expressive expression expresses exceptions. Cause hip-hop hijacking by MCs lacking, overcompensate by attacking. Performing hardcore like porn stars and bad acting. Yeah, yeah, I'm that motherfucking gangster nerd you heard about. MC++, I'm a gangster nerd. I'm a gangster nerd, strap.
grab a USB. I'm a gangster nerd, you can't code like me. I'm a chip hop nerd, writing code in C. I'm a chip hop nerd, a rapping PhD. I'm a gangster nerd, strapping USB. I'm a gangster nerd, you can't code like me. I'm a chip hop nerd, writing code in C. I'm a chip hop nerd, a rapping PhD. I live by principles of optimality. Show mathematically that your proof's a fallacy. Improve an operation, points of articulation. Prune a search graph with all the math. Reduction to 3 SAT, pipe a faucet, cat file system so fat, leave you with a lack of confidence about your processes. You can't process this because you're so incompetent. You're trying to follow this, but it seems so obvious. So I'll be real pedantic when it comes to semantic. Describe all the steps, explaining concepts, reducing red X's inside my context. Why my rhyme's so complex, the grammar can't express. MC++, computing hex. Variants of this concept implemented without success. So allow me to flex my knowledge, yo. Something you can't find in no community college. Got even the most envious haters to acknowledge that I'm a CS pimp in every sense of the word. And I'm talking about 4 bytes of true gangster nerd. I'm a gangster nerd, strapping USB. I'm a gangster nerd, you can't code like me. I'm a chip hop nerd, writing code in C. I'm a chip hop nerd, a rapping PhD. I'm a gangster nerd, strapping USB. I'm a gangster nerd, you can't code like me. I'm a chip hop nerd, writing code in C. I'm a chip hop nerd, a rapping PhD. Snoopy caches and directory based systems, so efficient, it's necessary but not sufficient. Keeping your database system so consistent, so persistent. MC++ brought chip hop to existence. So listen, AI and computer vision, hash tables and values without collisions. Incisions in your brain, injecting with knowledge. Send me an act so I know you acknowledge that you received my packet while I hack it. I say strapped with a USB drive in my jacket. Non-interference between concurrent threads. I'm treating your suckers like lists. I'm removing all your head. Chemical stacks while I update my stack frame. Gotta protect your heat to stay in the game. Shit's deep when haters spitting dirt on my name. But them haters gonna hate when they see in my fame. Cause I'm fundamental, like the Ayatollah. I told ya, treat you like an MLS, I fold ya. I'm a gangster nerd. I'm a gangster nerd, strapping USB. I'm a gangster nerd, you can't code like me. I'm a chip hop nerd, sipping Earl Grey tea. I'm a gangster nerd, the master of IT.
When one is clever.